on today's Run to the Top podcast.
Our hips don't stay strong if we don't continue working on the strength and stability in them. We may start out with really good mechanics in our legs, but as our hips weaken, our knees fall in a little bit, our foot collapses a little bit. Over time, we can get knee pain, we can get ankle pain, we can get foot pain.
Welcome to the Run to the Top podcast from Runners Connect, where it's all about learning from the best and most inspiring minds in the sport. Together, we can train a smarter, healthier, and faster running community. Now here's your host, Stephanie K. Atwood.
Welcome. This is Stephanie K. Atwood, Boston Marathon qualifier, coach, and host for the Run to the Top podcast. Congratulations to all of you who ran in Boston. Boston is a symbol of so much that is good about running: the resilience of runners, the traditions and hospitality of the Boston people, the history from when running the marathon started in 1897. All of this has made the Boston Marathon an icon of marathons, and one that is in many ways bigger than life. Congratulations to Ambie Burfoot, who we interviewed just last week, and to all of you out there who have run and trained so hard for Boston. Don't forget to participate in our bonus episode about your experience at the Boston Marathon. This year or any other year that you ran, let's celebrate the running of Boston. Call in to our Boston Marathon Experience phone message line at runnersconnect.net/share and record your favorite one or two experiences from the race. Keep your message to about 60 seconds or less. Runners Connect will pick the best out of these and create a bonus episode for Run to the Top, just about Boston. That's runnersconnect.net/share. Thanks so much. On today's podcast, do you or someone you know suffer from plantar fasciitis or IT band issues? And almost everybody does who is a runner. Today, our guest is Dr. Breanne Showman-Brown, who has been treating folks for more than a decade. We'll start with some basic questions for the doctor, like what causes plantar fasciitis and what is IT band syndrome, plus learn how to prevent and treat these conditions. Stay with us to hear the details from Dr. Breanne Showman-Brown, but first, a message from our sponsors.
Let's talk about Spartan. With over 60 races all around the country, finding one to commit to shouldn't be too hard, as long as you leave your excuses behind. Spartan is an obstacle course racing company with races for every athletic ability and skill level, starting with the 3-plus mile, 20-plus obstacle sprint, all the way to the 12-plus mile, 30-plus obstacle beast. Every racer can find what's right for them. You work hard. You push yourself through the weekday grind with grit, discipline, and determination. Bring that same grit and determination to a Spartan race near you. Let it propel you through hills, climbs, and carries. Will it be easy? No. Will it be worth it? Absolutely. Sign up for the best weekend meeting of your life and race alongside a community of 50 million. Running is the most underrated Spartan obstacle, and Spartan believes if you can run, you can race. Find your Spartan race today. Visit runnersconnect.net/Spartan for an exclusive offer. Find a race near you and view training and nutrition tips.
Welcome back to today's podcast and our guest, Dr. Breanne Showman-Brown. Dr. Brown has been a licensed physical therapist since 2006. Since that time, she has been helping active adults and athletes get back to the things they love without the use of pain medication, injections, or surgeries. As ideas and theories in rehabilitation and functional movement are constantly changing, she is constantly searching for the new information that will get you back to the activities you love as quickly and safely as possible. Being a runner herself, she also understands the desire to want to push through the pain, not willing to take time off, and wanting to get back to activity as soon as possible when required or forced to take a break. She does her best to keep you active in the things you are able to do, modifying as necessary, but not taking you completely off the track, trail, or road. Thank you for joining me today, Breanne.
You are quite welcome. I'm thrilled to be here today to talk with you and just educate all these runners out here.
Yeah, it's very cool. Is it okay if I call you Brianne during our talk?
Yes, certainly.
I know that doctor is not only an important term, but it also is something that has to be earned. So you are, I know you are a doctor, but it's easier for me if we can be a little less formal about that. So thank you. I do have four beginning questions for all of our guests, and here they go. How old are you now? Where were you born? Where are you living now? And what is your favorite race, distance, or type of race?
I am 36 years old currently. I was born in Ohio, but grew up in Nebraska, and I am currently living in the Phoenix area. And favorite race distance is the half marathon.
That one definitely comes up a lot. So, okay, so now we get to move into the fun part, the talking part. Tell us a bit about yourself and something that people might not know about you that would be fun to share.
Yeah, certainly. So as far as just a little bit about me, I grew up always athletic, always in sports. High school, decided to run cross country and track. My brother was already doing that, and looked like a lot of fun, seemed like a lot of fun, seemed a good challenge. So decided to do that. I ran a year in college and then decided to stop, left the team itself, and then started doing some half marathons and marathons with a friend of mine. So that's kind of how I got along this running pathway.
How did you do in track? And what was your event or events?
In track, high school was 4x8 mile and 2 mile. And then in undergrad, in college, it was 1500 and 3000.
Tough ones. That's the same as I ran when I was in college. And there's a lot of, you put in a lot of miles for those events.
Yeah. Middle distance ones are better for me. Like, I didn't have the speed for the 800 once I got into college, and the longer distances on a track just gets boring.
I agree, and I definitely understand what that's like. I actually did make it to the community college finals for the state of California in the 3,000 meters, but I entered in a field where I was the lowest qualifying time, or, you know, the highest qualifying time, whatever you want to call it, the slowest qualifying time. And that's actually, I got lapped by the winner by the end of the race. So I know what it feels like to to run a lot of laps and get kind of boring. So what got you started on the path to physical therapy as a career?
Yeah, when I was in high school thinking about careers, I wanted something in the medical field, but I wanted something that was more personable, more one-on-one, you know, not in and out of the room like doctors are in usually 5-10 minutes. And I wanted to stick around athletes. Being active, being an athlete all my life, I wanted to stick around active individuals and be doing something that I was active. I'm not one to just sit around and sit in one place and be real stagnant. So I needed something that I was going to be able to move around with a lot during the day too.
Mm-hmm. And what did it involve for you to get to the place where you are now? There's got to be a lot of schooling in there, as well as I would imagine internship and that kind of thing.
Yeah. So after an undergrad degree, which took me 4 years, then my PT school was a total of 3 years. The last year was primarily all clinicals though.
And what does that mean? What actually happened during that last year?
So in the last year, you're placed in all different settings. And so in physical therapy, there's hospital settings, there's outpatient, you have neuro, which is more of your like stroke and spinal cord injuries, pediatrics, just to name a few. And so when you are doing your clinicals, they send you to you spend 8 to 12 weeks at different settings. So you get a good idea of all the different environments that you could potentially be in for your career or for a career as a physical therapist.
Yeah. So you ended up working with athletes, and it sounds like you had a chance to work with lots of different kinds of patients before you chose athletes. What led you to wanting to work with athletes specifically?
I like the challenge of it, and I like the drive and determination that they have. A lot of times just dealing with, whether it be high school kids or working age people, especially the working age people, they have families, so they're more invested in their family. They're more invested in the career, which is good for, you know, a person, but they aren't as invested in getting better.
Mm.
But whereas the athletes typically want to get back to training and to competing, and so they're more invested in the time that it takes to get better.
Yeah, that's an interesting way of looking at it, because I realized kind of early on in my going through college that I wanted to work with people who wanted to stay well rather than to work with people who were already unhealthy. And, you know, it's not that the two don't overlap by any means, but there is there's an attitude or there's a state of mind in people who want to be well or get well or stay well rather than people who kind of want the system to take care of them and keep them, not necessarily vital, but keep them going for as long as possible. It's a less involved level of being, taking care of yourself.
Yeah, definitely. And it's been fun for me as a clinician. I've kind of transitioned myself from more of a injury rehab person to more of an injury prevention mindset. And so I'm doing a lot more education.
I love
with
that.
People via social media and other media in order to really just educate people on how to prevent these injuries and, you know, help themselves rather than, you know, waiting until they're broken before they come to see me.
I think that's such a great approach, and people in general, I think people need to acknowledge that they have to think about staying healthy before they get hurt. Ideally, I think it's a more healthy way of looking at your life. But that being said, I wanted to mention that you do have these incredible things online that can be searched through YouTube. You're going to be able to talk about this at the end of this interview, how they can get in touch with you. But you have a lot of free information that you hand out, and I've looked at some of it. I think you had one where you combined a bunch of shorter ones into one, like 10 exercise session, and that was really useful and really good exercises too. So thanks for putting that there, and a note to our listeners, they can find that and you'll be able to help them even get more information on how to contact you a little bit later in the interview. So let's move into the two main topics that you and I discussed we'd go over today, and one is plantar fasciitis, and the other is IT band syndrome. As a coach myself and dealing with runners on a daily basis and then sending them out when they need some additional help, plantar fasciitis happens to such a large number of runners, and IT band syndrome, of course, is at least indirectly connected. Maybe I should say directly connected. So I'd like you to kind of explain what these two things are, what they actually talk about, and how they occur. And then we'll also go into ways of either keeping them from occurring, period, or dealing with pain when it happens. So there's a lot there. So you start where you want.
Okay, sounds great. So as far as plantar fasciitis goes, it gets looped into a lot of different issues. A lot of, you know, people get pain in the bottom of their foot and people just go straight to plantar fasciitis for one thing, which isn't always accurate.
Right.
Plantar fasciitis, you know, by definition, by symptom, is very specific in how it presents. Typically, first steps out of bed in the morning, you're going to get really, really sharp pains. And then after you get a couple steps in, it loosens up. It's not as bad anymore. And then it may start getting a little bit irritated later on in the day. Other things that can happen with the foot, though, is we can get other areas of tightness, other areas of restriction in the foot. And those are going to be more consistent pain throughout the day, consistent pain as you go throughout your walking, your run. And it lingers a little bit more. So just want to clear kind of that up a little bit first and explain, you know, the true what plantar fasciitis is and then what other things get looped into it as well.
Yeah, that's a really good point. And I, as much as you can clarify that, I think our listeners would benefit from it tremendously. I know the term at the end of a word, itis, means inflammation, if I'm correct. Is that true? Irritation, inflammation?
Correct.
And so, you know, there's tendonitis, there's plantar fasciitis, and even though those are very similar, in especially in how they feel, they are affecting slightly different parts of the anatomy. And if you can go into some of that, I think it would be really useful, because I just don't think that, and you must run into this as well, I don't think people understand the distinctions and or what the itis versus the osis versus the general kind of nerve pain that might be shooting up in the middle of your foot. Some of those kinds of things are, it's not clear what those are. So if you can define that as well as possible, and maybe actually explain some of the different kinds of pain that we might feel in our feet, I think that would be really useful.
Yes, certainly. So to start out with the what's the definitions of the itis and the osis, like you were saying? An itis, so a tendonitis, a fasciitis, a bursitis, anything with an itis is an inflammation. And that is basically something's going on in that tissue to cause irritation and tell your body to stop doing what it's doing in order to correct something, fix something. When you ignore that long enough, we get what we call an osis. So then it becomes like a tendinosis. And, at that level, we're starting to get to a breakdown point in that tissue. So rather than just being an inflammation, it's starting to actually break down that tissue a little bit. Over time, as that happens, if you continue ignoring that, then we all that's when we can start getting further tears and further injury, significant injuries at that point. So it's really important to, when you start feeling things, to start getting them addressed pretty immediately rather than letting them get to that point, because the longer you get they transition from that itis to the osis, the more significant damage is being done to that soft tissue.
Wow, that's really good information. Thank you so much for clarifying that. And it does then also emphasize that this stuff needs to be identified pretty early on. And my understanding is that a lot of it can be dealt with individually without having to spend maybe more than one visit with a doctor, but identifying what the problem is where you're going to be able to then help yourself to overcome it.
Correct. And a lot of issues sticking with the feet are caused essentially by the same overlying issue. And it's just a matter of everybody responds a little bit different as far as what tissues wants to get irritated in the foot. But for the most part, it's just a common biomechanical issue or strength issue that causes all of these problems. I'm going to kind of go a little bit further in detail there. So on the bottom of the foot is your plantar fascia. And that plantar fascia basically is just a really thick tissue that lines the bottom of the foot, helps kind of support the bottom of that foot. Underlying to that are a lot of smaller muscles and tendons that help control that foot itself. So it helps your toes curl, it helps your toes extend, it gives support to that arch. And any one of those muscles can get irritated as well when with foot issues. So a lot of times it presents to someone as a plantar fasciitis just because of where those underlying muscles lie. But it's pretty common for those muscles themselves to get what we call trigger points or tight areas in them that can mimic this pain very easily.
Mm-hmm. And then how would you identify that, or what would you do at that point to be able to help yourself?
Yeah, so it's a combination of what I like to call breaking it down and building it back up.
Mm-hmm.
You have to get the tightness out of the area in order for that muscle to actually work properly again.
Okay.
So typically I will teach somebody how to loosen up those muscles on their own through some different methods, and then train them on how to make their foot work normal again, how to strengthen their foot properly in order to actually have good control of that foot, have good control of that arch.
Brianne, that is like such a focal point for me. And this is one that I just think doesn't get spoken about enough. And it's the, after the pain goes away, after you might even be running again, how do you take care of yourself so that it doesn't happen again?
It's a lot. You just have to remember the maintenance part. I do my foot exercises at least 3 times a week just to keep everything nice and strong. Mm-hmm. I do a lot. For the most part, I'm barefoot or I'm in barefoot shoes, minimalist shoes. Mm-hmm. Most shoes naturally shut down the muscles in the foot. So if you don't take time to actually work on keeping them strong, they aren't going to stay strong.
And do you have some videos that you are sharing or able to share with our audience when they get in touch with you?
I certainly do.
Cool. Let's move on to this IT band syndrome, because for one thing, we have another term here, syndrome. And I just want you to help people understand that these things mean different things. And for us to understand the basics is a great place to start. And then IT band in general, I don't think people necessarily know all of what's included in the IT band. So can you talk about IT band syndrome and then how that would present itself for a runner?
Yeah. So IT band syndrome, anytime I see syndrome, I think more of symptom. It is typically you're feeling pain in an area because something else isn't working properly, essentially. Mm. So that IT band, the IT band itself is what is called a non-contractile tissue. It's similar to that plantar fascia. It's just a pretty dense, thick band of tissue that runs down the side of your thigh. At the top of it is a muscle. So essentially that IT band is by definition a tendon. At the top of it sits a muscle that is one of our hip flexors. And then underneath the IT band is where our quadriceps sits. So a lot of times what happens for a number of reasons is we get either tightness in the muscle that sits at the top of the IT band, or we get kind of some restrictions, adhesions, rubbing, that sort of thing between the IT band and the quadriceps itself. And that's when we get that pain down the side of our leg that people term as IT band syndrome.
Now, as I understand it, it actually goes all the way down to your foot. So can you explain how that connects?
Yeah. So the IT band itself connects or attaches to the outside of the leg just below the knee. And then through some fascial attachments, it connects into the group of muscles called the peroneals on the outside of our leg, which those go all the way down to our foot.
So we had a woman talking to us about how your ankle hurts, and in fact, it's because your hip is, out of sync. So can you talk about that with how it all relates to the IT band?
Yes. I love this topic. So when our hips are weak or unstable or lacking the endurance, which for runners is very common, most runners tend to just run and not work on the strength component. Our hips don't stay strong if we don't continue working on the strength and stability in them. So what happens over time is we may start out with really good mechanics in our legs, but as our hips weaken, our mechanics change a little bit, our knees fall in a little bit, our foot collapses a little bit. This over time causes strain anywhere down the chain, essentially. So a lot of times when that hip gets weak, we can get IT band issues, we can get knee pain, we can get ankle pain, we can get foot pain.
So it really does take a professional to help us figure out where the problem lies. We can, of course, as the people feeling the pain, we can identify that, but then to have someone figure out where that is originating and then what we need to do to correct it it sounds to me like it's really important to get some outside input on that from someone who is experienced in that area.
It really is. 9 times out of 10, the actual driver of the pain is not where the pain is actually occurring.
Now, I also, of course, watched some of your videos and saw some great exercises in there. And one of the problems with running in general is that, you love running, you're out there running, and until you have pain, you don't really see a lot of reason in doing anything besides running. I am certainly guilty of that myself, but can you talk about maybe the minimum that we should do to at least try to prevent these things, both in terms of, you know, upping our running and our training and also the kinds of strength exercise that we might want to include on a regular basis for preventing these injuries to ever occur?
Yeah, I'd say at a minimum, there's typically three exercises I start off with any of my athletes, actually all pretty much anyone I see, for their feet. So on a consistent basis, it's strength, keeping the feet strong. And then there's a lot of different exercises that you can find for keeping the hips strong and stable. Mm-hmm. I say pick 4 or 5 of them and do them on a consistent basis, like 3 or 4 times a week. It's not something you necessarily have to do every single day, but it's something you have to do in order to maintain if you want to stay injury free.
And how does that fit into core strength? What is the connection between hip strength, core strength, and lack of injury?
So technically our core itself is all the way from basically our neck down to our knees. So keeping those hips strong plays a huge role into everything else. We definitely need to keep the core strong as well, because when that core's not strong and the back starts to get a little bit unstable when we get out there on long runs, it definitely plays into things. But I feel like people are more apt to think more about the abdominals versus, you know, keeping the back strong and keeping the hips strong.
Yeah. So flexibility also plays a role in there, right?
Definitely. Definitely.
Yeah, it's interesting how much other stuff really kind of needs to be included. Although I know when you look at it time-wise, it's really not that much time. Are you thinking like 15 to 30 minutes, maybe 4 or 5 times a week is enough for both the strength and the stretching to maintain?
I think so. And it's mainly about finding a balance. You know, if you want to do your strength stuff one day and do your mobility stuff the next day and just kind of space it out. Mm-hmm. So you're not spending a lot of time every single day on it. It's just spending a little bit of time every single day on it to maintain. The other important thing is, especially with runners, is if you sit a lot, that's going to cause a lot of tightness in those hips. And so that's an area that's very important to keep loose as a runner, especially with sitting. They get kind of tight in the front of the hip. And so trying to get that that extension in that back of that stride can be very difficult.
So what is something you could do, like maybe several times a day, just getting up from your chair kind of thing, to help prevent that, but not to have to take too much time with it? Cause you know, I know we all just sit an inordinate amount of time.
And essentially you kind of just mentioned it, just getting up out of the chair for one. You know, getting up every half hour, hour, and moving around, walking around is, you know, almost enough to just keep things loose and keep things a little bit more mobile rather than letting them sitting there for 4 hours at a time, 5 hours at a time, and letting everything get really tight.
Yeah. Wow. That's really useful information. Now, we're of course covering this pretty quickly, but recovery when you do have an injury, can you give us some general recovery times or expectations for when we do have these issues? Because if it's the irritation that you were talking about, I know that continuing to be active can just keep irritating it and isn't necessarily ever going to get you over the problem. So what kind of time are we talking about?
Part of the answer, it depends on how long it's been going on. Uh-huh. If it's been just a week or two, we're still in that itis stage, that to recover from is a lot quicker, as far as like 2 to 4 weeks. If we're in that it's been going on for 3 to 4 weeks or longer, we're in that breakdown stage, it's a good, for true tissue healing time, it's a good 6 to 8 weeks.
Wow.
That doesn't mean that you can't be, you know, getting back to training in that time frame. It's just it's still a preventative time that we have to be cautious in how we progress someone back to that training.
Right. And again, that might be a time when it really is important to have someone monitoring you and helping you get back as quickly as possible by actually taking it a little bit easier in some of those areas that are causing the irritation.
Definitely.
Yeah. Now, Nutrition and hydration are also something that affect injury prevention and recovery. Can you talk about those? I know you are into both of those as a part of a strong, healthy athlete. So how do those fit into this whole scheme of things?
Yeah, I do a lot of nutrition coaching with my athletes, and it comes in a couple different ways. There's, just having good nutrition in general, getting the amount of calories you need, getting a good amount of protein in order to maintain your muscle tissue is important.
What is that, Brianne? What is that in terms of the actual amount of grams of protein you need? Because I think a lot of people, I see this in my coaching, that a lot of people just aren't aware of the need for protein in particular for healthy athletic bodies.
Yeah. So for an endurance athlete, endurance versus strength athletes vary a little bit. Mm-hmm. For endurance athletes, typically 0.8 to 1 gram of protein per kilogram of body weight is what is ideal.
No wonder nobody knows how to do that.
I know, right?
You know, because we don't deal in grams or in kilograms. But I do know, having looked at a lot of nutrition facts on the backs of things, and you can also look this up online if you're looking for something like cauliflower, which doesn't necessarily have packaging, that you can see how many grams are in a portion and what the ratio of protein, fat, and carbohydrate is in it. And that can then help people to start, getting a sense of how that all fits together.
Definitely. And there's a lot of different apps and websites that you can use to track your food intake as well.
And they're free.
And they're totally free. Yeah. It's what I use. It's what I suggest my athletes use. And so it's really easy to keep track of what you're taking in on a daily basis.
Which one do you use?
I use MyFitnessPal.
Yeah. Lots of people use that. I use that too. It's really good. I think it's very well done.
Yeah, it really is. It has a lot of verified information, which is very helpful.
Yeah. Talk about hydration as well. And with hydration, water versus electrolytes versus, when either or both of them or even singly, just drinking water or adding electrolytes might be useful.
Yeah. So first off, just plain water. Our bodies require water in order to function, just our normal day-to-day life. We need a certain amount of water on a daily basis. Add exercise to that, we definitely need more. What is advised for just normal day-to-day life is at a minimum half your body weight in ounces of water a day.
Mm-hmm.
When you add exercise to that, it can be hard to know how much you need to take in necessarily until you really get to kind of know your body.
Right.
But a great way to start to figure it out, and obviously it'll vary from, winter, fall, spring, summer, but take your body weight before you go out for your run and take your body weight after you go for your run. So just mm-hmm. hop on the scale before, hop on it after.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever you lost in weight during that time period was water weight essentially.
Right. Unless you took in water, then you need to actually calculate that into the calculation.
Correct. Correct.
But I've known about that for a long time. And I think that's good because then you know how much your body is taking in. Of course, it's on a given day at a given temperature, but at least it gives you some idea of how much your body is sweating out stuff and using water.
And it's a lot more than you think.
Interesting.
During the summer, it's not abnormal for me to be down like 5 or 6 pounds.
Really? Wow.
After about an hour. So,
and you're in a hot area too. So,
well, yes, I am.
But yeah, that's a lot of water. And so not only do you not want to lose that much, I mean, you want to make sure that you're rehydrating on a regular basis, but you also want to be aware of that kind of water is coming out of you with no awareness of specifically, getting rid of it. Just your body is just utilizing it.
Correct.
Yeah. Now, how about electrolytes in there?
So anytime you sweat, you are going to sweat out some salts and electrolytes as well. So it's definitely something you have to replenish.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone loses them at a different rate, though. So it takes time to learn your body, essentially. I've right. gotten mine figured out pretty well that I know how I feel when I'm low.
Uh-huh.
But essentially, you know, finding some, just taking in some electrolytes as you're on your long runs is going to be ideal. So every, you know, 15, 30 minutes as you're doing your marathon training or your ultra training, just taking in a little bit of electrolytes just to keep them consistent in your system is going to be most effective.
Yeah, and I think you're totally right about it being very individual, but I also think that it's important for people to realize that on a relatively short run, it's not such an issue. But on longer runs, if your blood gets like thick because you're not drinking enough water and actually adding back in some of those micronutrients and things, it's going to affect your ability to perform. And it also could be at a level that's even dangerous.
It really can be. I've known people that because of either just dehydration or electrolytes have passed out. For me, I get lightheaded if I start getting a little bit low,
mm-hmm.
A little bit dizzy. So it can cause just simple things like that. Or if it gets bad enough, like it can cause organ failure, essentially.
Yeah. That doesn't happen too often, but the potential is there with becoming dehydrated enough. I do want to talk about electrolytes just a little teeny bit more, because electrolytes, of course, you can buy them in the store, in the grocery store. And when you look at the ingredient list, it can be, you know, it's this turquoise blue drink and it's got high fructose corn syrup and lots of sugar and maybe not too much else, or the stuff that you can't pronounce because it's,
yes.
you know,
yes.
that is really isn't what we're talking about, correct?
Correct.
And there's lots of brands of electrolytes, but I would like to clarify, and I'd love to get input from you as well, Brianne, that electrolytes don't have to be sugar at all. And that it's really micronutrients and replacing what your body is missing. So at different times, during different levels of training, or even just during different times of your life, the electrolyte input is going to be different.
Oh, definitely. Definitely. You know, essentially electrolytes are the potassium, the magnesium, the calcium. So it's actual, you know, things that you could essentially take in some other way besides powder form,
right,
or drink form.
Right. So it's definitely something for people to be aware of and to understand that you don't have to be drinking 200 or 300 calories of something that calls itself an electrolyte drink to be healthy. In fact, those are more like soft drinks than they are actually electrolytes.
Yeah, there's so much added sugar and other chemicals to those that they ultimately aren't ideal.
Yeah. Okay. So if you can go over a few self-healing techniques, I would love that. Some suggestions.
Certainly. I do want to backtrack just one second to the nutrition aspect.
Totally.
And that is some of the natural anti-inflammatories that you can take in just by like natural foods, essentially.
Cool.
One really good one is just turmeric.
Mm-hmm.
That one, and then pair that with Bioperine, which is essentially black pepper.
How do you spell that?
Bioperene, I believe.
Okay.
And essentially what, for the turmeric to get absorbed properly in the body, having that Bioperene helps.
Okay.
With that absorption.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of studies have actually shown that turmeric has better anti-inflammatory results than actual anti-inflammatory medication.
And how would you take it? Because I know there's all, you know, you can buy the root, you can buy the powder, you can get it in capsules. What are your thoughts on the turmeric?
You can almost do it in any of the ways.
Mm-hmm.
I buy it in capsule form. You can just as simply use it for cooking.
Mm-hmm.
A good friend of mine, she's created a drink with pineapple, which is also a good natural anti-inflammatory, turmeric, ginger. I feel like there's one more thing in it. That she's created that for her anti-inflammatory drink.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of different ways you can take it in, and mm-hmm. really neither is better than another. It's just a matter of, you know, utilizing it.
Does it need fat or anything else to be absorbed? You did say the bioperine, but does it need to be taken with food, or is it something that should be taken individually without food?
It really doesn't matter. It's just getting it in the system.
Okay, good. And the bioperine, is that I don't know. I've never heard that term before, so I'm wondering in terms of how you would buy it. Is it in the supplement store? How do you find that?
Some of the turmeric supplements naturally have them in it. I know mine does.
Okay.
But essentially, it is a chemical that's in black pepper. So if you just start adding some black pepper to your food you're using the turmeric, it just kind of naturally works together.
Great. Oh, that's really good. Yeah, I have never heard that term before. So thank you for that. Talk about when it's really essential to see a professional, to get to a doctor and make sure that your body's in good shape.
Essentially, if you've gone 1 or 2 weeks, if you start having pain, you've gone 1 or 2 weeks of doing just some self-treatment stuff and nothing's changed, then you probably need to get into somebody. Essentially, definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting a different change. You know, if you're doing the same stretch every single day before you run, yeah, and you have to do that every single day before you run, you're probably not addressing the right issue.
Oh, really good information. Thank you for that. You've got some great, just basic points that it's like they're hitting home, I tell you. Okay, so Brianne, what people or experiences have had the biggest impact on your life and where you are at this point in time?
One of them actually goes back to my high school cross country coach and kind of a motto that we had.
Mm-hmm.
And that is, I can, I will.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of just followed me throughout everything in my life.
Nice.
As far as with different sports and competition things, my, you know, schooling, my business. If you keep that positive attitude, say I can, say I will. Not that everything's going to happen like you want it to or in the time frame you want it to, but if you just kind of have that mindset, it definitely helps, you know, move along things.
Yeah, I like that a lot. And it's kind of saying to yourself, don't limit the way that you look at what you're capable of trying. It, as you said, it might not happen that way, but if you don't try it, you definitely won't. It won't happen.
Exactly.
Yeah, I like that a lot. Well, we are going to change gears here and move into the final kick. And we'll talk about that in just a moment. But first, a word from our sponsors.
If you're struggling with injuries and have tried everything to stay healthy, we've put together a course that is exactly what you need. How is this course different? Unlike most injury prevention advice, we get specific to your issues and skip the generic exercises. We start by giving you a mobility and strength assessment to identify where you are susceptible to injuries. Then, based on the results of the test, we offer a specific day-by-day plan to attack those issues. Each day's prescription takes less than 15 minutes to implement and includes videos, PDFs, and written descriptions of the exact stretching, strength, foam rolling, and treatment routines you need to do each day. On top of this, we help you identify when you are safe to return to running, how to modify your training, how to find the right shoe, and how to fit everything in with your tight schedule. To check out the course, head to runnersconnect.net/injury. Last year, when we put this course together, we asked our email list to try it out. 262 runners took us up on the offer. Of those 262 runners, 82%, yes, 214 people, were able to get completely healthy within 3 weeks. Now's your chance. Visit runnersconnect.net/injury and see how you can get healthy too.
Welcome back. We are just going into the final kick here. And Brianne, do you understand what the final kick is about?
I do.
Okay, cool. So I've got a question, starting question, and there's a couple more. What is your favorite local training run? And tell us enough that our readers could find it if they come to your city. Tell us what your city is again so people know where to park, the name of the starting point, those kind of details so that people could actually show up and do a run in Phoenix, I think it is, right?
It is, yes. Yeah. So it's no specific trail necessarily. There's an area here called South Mountain, and there are a lot of different trails and routes on it,
mm-hmm.
all different levels of difficulty as far as you can go pretty flat or you can go pretty steep with it and mm-hmm. pretty rugged.
Mm-hmm.
And I also can't give you a trail name because I tend to like hop in and out of different trails when I do go out there. But it's a great place just to go and get outside. You can test, you know, do whatever difficulty level you want. You can almost go just as long or as short as you want. And there's always people out there. So it's not really a place that if you do go by yourself that you really have to worry about, you know, if you do trip over something, get injured, that you're going to be left out there all by yourself stranded.
Now, where would you park?
There's a couple different areas. There's a parking area on the east side of it off of 48th Street.
Okay.
And then there's a parking area off the north side of it, kind of off of Central and Baseline.
Okay, cool. So those are two potential starting points. And are you saying that the trails are pretty easy for people to both to navigate and also to know how far they're going? Are they marked pretty well?
They are marked pretty well. And like at the beginning, you can see maps of all the different trails. You can actually, I can't remember the name of the actual website, but there's a website that you can actually get all the names and the different trails and see the paths. So it's pretty easy to navigate there.
So if people looked up like South Mountain Phoenix on Google, they might be able to get more information, something along those lines.
Yes.
Yeah. And are any of the trails paved or are they all dirt? And what about that part?
So here the trails are more desert terrain. Mm-hmm, so mm-hmm. They're pretty dry and rocky.
Mm-hmm.
Cactus and all the desert plants are out there. The one thing you need to be cautious is, depending on time of year, is there are rattlesnakes.
Yeah. Okay. And they would be out mostly, what, when the sun is rising? I mean, as things are just getting a little bit warm, or when would you be most likely to see rattlesnakes?
You know, to be honest, I don't know if there's a specific necessary time. I know I've heard them in the afternoons before when I've been out there.
Mm-hmm.
But I know, you know, I've seen them in the mornings too. So I don't really know if there's a certain time frame that they're actually out there, to be honest.
Gotcha. Although sometimes they would probably be a little more sleepy than other times, a little more docile.
And they'll typically rattle, so you'll know to move the other direction.
Right. Now, what about water? Is there water along the trail or do you have to bring your own?
Definitely bring your own.
Okay. Those are good. And safety issues, you said there's usually other people out there, so it's not.
Yeah, it's usually, especially on the weekends, there's always people out there.
Yeah. Okay, so moving on to a recommended running book. What's one of your favorites?
I'm going to, sticking with the kind of self-treat realm, and I know a couple of the people that you've had on have mentioned the author, not the specific book, though, is Ready to Run. It's another Kelly Starrett book.
Mm. And what do you like about that book?
It's good general information for the different things that cause tightness and weakness in the areas that runners need. So mm-hmm. he has some more general books, but this one's more built just specifically for runners and addressing this was specific issues that runners tend to deal with and need to address on a maintenance level basis.
Great info. Thank you for that. Yeah, I love this section of the interviews because I learned so much, and I'm guessing that our listeners also are able to learn quite a bit from this session. A tidbit of wisdom or humor, whichever you choose for the end of the interview.
I think I just was listening to a podcast the other day and I loved what kind of a phrase he used. And that is, pain is your body's request for change.
Oh, that is really good. And now we just have to listen to that, right?
Exactly.
And believe it, that we're not beyond dealing with. I mean, that we have to recognize it's there and do something about it and just not pretend it's going to go away.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, thank you for that. That's a good one. Do you have any questions for me?
I think I'm just curious. I know you've been running for a long time and obviously have a big running community, but how did you get into running?
I was in high school before Title IX came into being. And of course, Title IX is a big deal for somebody like me because it changed while I was just out of high school. I would recommend people look up Title IX if they don't know about it, because it really is, in a nutshell, it's when women had a more equal opportunity for funding for athletic sports. And made a huge difference in, in the way, especially in college financing for women. But we were asked, as I graduated from high school, we had to run a mile on the track, and I had no idea how to do that. And it really pissed me off because I had no idea how to pace myself. It was either all out running, which lasted for 100 yards or so, or I didn't know what to do beyond that. And so it really made me want to learn more about running. And so I did learn more about running. That same year as I graduated from high school, I ended up running my first trail marathon. And I have no idea how fast I ran it, but I know that it was such a life-changing event for me, because for me to be able to run more than 100 yards was, it was just huge. It was like a whole thing of what you mentioned earlier, I can, I will. That opened up so many aspects of my life. So ever since then, running has just been an integral part of how I see myself, and that attitude of, I'm going to try this, I'm going to see how far I can go. So thank you for asking that.
You're quite welcome. That's awesome.
Yeah, thank you. So is there someone or some subject about running that you would like for us to feature in the future podcast?
You know, me personally, I know you've done some of them, but just get them information out there more. I'm such a proponent of, not say barefoot running, but just the minimalist shoes, being barefoot, getting those strong feet, that I think the more information you can get out there for other people, the better.
I like that a lot. I am totally with you on that, too. I think the concept behind minimalist shoes and the way that it affects your anatomy and all of that is really in my mindset as well. So thank you for that. Yeah, that's terrific. Okay, contact information and how our listeners can stay in touch with you.
Yeah, so direct contact information, you can email me at Brianne@getyourfixpt.com. And then social media, you can find me on Facebook at Get Your Fix Physical Therapy. And I also have Get Your Fix Nutrition. Both of those are my two businesses. And then I co-admin a running group as well on Facebook. It's Running Injury Support Group.
And that's how I found you.
Yes. So it's growing super fast. It's super engaging. It's super fun. So anyone who's interested in that can definitely hop over there and join us there.
Say that name again.
Running Injury Support Group.
Cool. And any others? Any other way you want people to get in touch with you? Are you on YouTube? Is that how I found those videos, or was that through the Facebook, one of your Facebook pages?
Probably both. Everything from Facebook I upload to YouTube. So I am on YouTube, and everything's really organized in a playlist. So it's actually really easy to isolate your information that you want.
Yeah. And I would highly recommend that people look at your videos, because they're short. They're well done, and you go through the correct form, and you also give a number of reps, I think, that people should do. And those are both really useful things.
Yes. And you can find that. Just search Get Your Fix Physical Therapy, and that's my YouTube channel.
Get Your Fix Physical Therapy. Boy, that's a lot of letters, too.
It is a lot of letters.
Well, thank you for all of that information. Thank you for joining us for today's podcast at Run to the Top. Follow us at the Runners Connect Winner Circle on Facebook at runnersconnect.net/FB. Subscribe to Run to the Top podcast at runnersconnect.net or on iTunes, Stitcher, etc. Dr. Brianne Showman-Brown, thank you so much for speaking with us today.
You are quite welcome. It was a pleasure to share this information.
Thank you, listeners. I hope you've enjoyed this episode. This is Stephanie K. Atwood, your host with Run to the Top. Goodbye.
Thanks for listening to the Run to the Top podcast from runnersconnect.net.